It's great to have you here on this 4th of July Sunday. It's a great day for us to celebrate, and not often we get a weekend for a 4th of July, so it's just an awesome that we can come and celebrate our freedom together. I do want to take a moment before I go on with the message today to review last week. Is that okay? Yes, I got a yes up front, so here I go. Last week, for those of you here, I told an awful story. Do you remember the story about the pastors from Princeton University? A study was done with pastors who were going to be pastors from Princeton University. They were asked to read the Good Samaritan story, walk across campus to another building, and give a talk on that. The study was, in between, there was a gentleman laying in the ground who looked like he'd been beat up. They divided the pastors into two groups. The first group, they told him, you have plenty of time, take your time going over. The second group, they said, you're late. You need to get there. And we know which group stopped, don't we? 12% of those who thought they were late walked right by this man. Some future pastors stepped over the man. That's the study. To get to their talk. Lesson is, if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you what? Busy. If the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. My prayer, as I suggested last week, is that we each, last week, have some intentional time to spend with those we love in our lives, intentional time to spend with friends, intentional time of listening to God in our lives and in our heart. If we don't, doesn't matter how good our heart is, if we're rushing by, we're stepping over bodies sometimes. So this week, again, what? Take some time, be intentional with those around you. Summer's a great time for that, unless you're a farmer. And I don't know any farmers here, are there? Take some time and listen, especially to those around you. All right, today, 4th of July, it is Freedom Sunday, if you will. And we are very grateful, are we not, to be part of a country that has the kind of freedom that we do. I know in terms of where I was born and how I was born and the situation, in another place I would not have had the freedom to be able to do what I can do this day. And many of you I know are in that same situation, and we need to be thankful for that, for the freedoms we have been given from God initially, but that we can live those out in this country. We do need to be careful, I would like to suggest. Sometimes you'll hear a lot of rhetoric about the United States is the greatest country in the world. Be very careful of that, because that comes off as prideful. And I don't think God likes prideful. And if we're about loving people as Christ loved us, if we say that and people feel a little different about countries, are we making any kind of impact for Christ? We're not, and that's our job. So be very careful about how we talk about that, but be thankful for what we have. All right? Today, freedom. First reading we have from the book of Exodus. We hear about the Israelites. We know this story well. We hear about the Israelites who put into slavery. You know, the Egyptians are afraid of them, so they put them in slavery and make them work, you know, as slaves for nothing. We hear the second part of the story, how God comes to Moses and said, I want you to go and free my people. We know God is interested in political freedom, in people being freed. And even as we are thankful for that in our country, we need to remember how we continue to work for that for people around the world, because there are places where slavery still is a reality. But today, I want to take it another step. What does it mean for us to use the gifts we have been given to live in the freedom of love and grace and service to others and not be bound, not be slaves to attitudes we have in our heart or in our own mind, but to be able to live that love, the gift that our country and our God has given us, to live in the ways of loving others around us, because we find ourselves bound so often. In the gospel lesson today, we hear freedom. Jesus says, I come to release the captives. And then we hear a message how he frees somebody from an illness, from an ailment. But what strikes me in the reading are the teachers that come after that. The Pharisees, the religious and the political leaders of the time say, you can't do that because it's a Sabbath. You can't free people. You can't do that on this day. These are the rules. And how sometimes we get attitudes like the Pharisees in our minds or in our hearts, in which we are not able to love, and we bind ourselves from things in our life. Story. And now some of you got an email about this story, because somebody this morning told me about this. Some of you would have heard part of this story before, but let me share. Is that okay if I do a rerun? You can change the channel if you want. In high school, I met a gentleman named David King. Mr. King was an executive director of the YMCA region of Ohio and West Virginia. Mr. King came to our school with a YMCA organization, and I got to know him, and he asked me if I'd be a camp counselor, and you've heard some of those stories. Well, I didn't for a while, but in 1976, I applied to be a counselor at a camp in West Virginia in the Monongahela National Forest. My application was accepted, and I went to be a counselor. And the first year was 1976, the bicentennial is when it was. And it was an awesome time to be at a camp. But it was a wonderful camp right in the forest. And when I got there, the camp had already started. But we had 3 weeks of a camp that we called Leadership Camp. It was for high school students. And I'm telling you, it was more fun than you could imagine. It was like ASP without the work. You know what I mean? You know, you didn't have to do the physical labor. You got to know the students. They got to know you. You talked about issues of philosophy. You talked about how do we lead in our society. You talked about how we are to work in our culture and in our nation in ways of leading others. And these were gifted high school students that would come. And we would have these discussions. We'd talk about world hunger. We'd meet around campfires. And we'd sing Kumbaya, and nobody would roll their eyes. You know what I mean? It was just an awesome time. David Runkle was the program director. We called him Runk. He was a gifted guitar player. He was playing rock and roll Christian music in the 70s when it was seen as scandalous. But he taught me how to play guitar that summer. That's the summer I learned. And it was just a wonderful time. And at the end of each of those 3 weeks, you hated to see the campers go home. I mean, you just hated to see that. You grew close to them, they grew close to you, and it was like, man, I could do this forever. And then the fourth week came. The fourth week was Adventure Camp. Adventure Camp was kids from 6 years old to 14 years old. And I don't know if you don't understand this, but when we got to the campfire and tried to sing Kumbaya, they weren't interested. Can you imagine that? But we had 3 wonderful weeks with high school students, and suddenly close to 200 young children descended on us. A few of the camp counselors knew how to work with kids. Many of us did not. And so when you go from an orderly group of high school students discussing philosophy to a group of 8 to 10-year-olds that are just punching each other and, you know, doing what 8 to 10-year-olds do, it was nuts. At night, they were loud. They'd go around the campfire. They wouldn't listen to what we said. You had kids that wouldn't eat. You had kids that wouldn't drink. You had kids that wouldn't brush their teeth. Every little thing we did was a battle for a while. And as things got hard with the kids, things got just as hard with the staff. Because we had personality conflicts. Can you imagine that? We had close to 30 people on staff. And some of the counselors didn't like other counselors. And as things got harder in the summer, they didn't mind sharing that with each other. And so the staff kind of went at each other. There were rumors and there were discussions about some staff is favored by other staff, by the program director. There were some discussions about some people are doing more work than others. You know, and when we had to do our chores, when it was wonderful with high school students, you know, have to clean the bathrooms and clean the outhouses when everything else was chaos, wasn't any fun anymore. You'd go to do your laundry, and it was a busy time. We had one washer and one dryer for 30 staff. You put your clothes in the laundry, you couldn't get to the dryer, you put your clothes in a plastic bag, and you forget about them for 3 days. Have you ever done that? In a valley where mold, you know, reigns supreme. I mean, sometimes you just got to throw those clothes away. And when you open that bag, it's awesome, isn't it? You're ruining your clothes. The staff's not getting along. When we break up between camps, we had to clean the camp ourselves. Some staff got so frustrated, they wouldn't show up to mop or sweep the cabins out or the dining hall or anything else. So some other staff got stuck with it. And so by the end of 10 days, guess what my attitude was? Did I make a mistake or what? I've had it. No more of this stuff. I made a huge mistake coming here. You know, I could have been home. I had painted homes for a painter for a couple summers, and he wanted me to come back. I could have been making twice as much money painting homes, sleeping in my bed, you know, having fun with my friends, going to the pool, going to see the Cincinnati Reds play, and at that time they were the big red machine. Do you remember them? I could have been going to those games, and here I am with a dysfunctional staff, with children that aren't listening, and I'm not making a difference. I'll do my time. It's just like prison. I'll do my time and I'm out of here. Well, 10 days was over. We learned a little bit how to work with children instead of high school kids. We stopped doing the kumbaya stuff and did a little better stuff. We had a few days off at midweek to kind of plan and try to get our heads straight. But then the next week after that, we had 3 weeks of what was called Youth Opportunity Camp. It was children who could not afford to go to camp. Dave King, our director, would raise the money, and the state would provide the rest of the money, and these kids would get to go to camp. It was a wonderful thing. But let me tell you, we had children from downtown Charleston and downtown Huntington, city kids. And you know, and those who've been on ASP, you know about hollers, don't you? We had kids from way up in the mountains, you know. We had cultural conflicts with the kids themselves. It was not an easy thing. We had a gifted staff. We learned how to do it. We did some stuff with kids. But every day was a struggle. And then you were lucky to get 4 or 5 hours of sleep before some kid would say, "Bill, I got to go to the bathroom." And you got to get up and do that. So that's it. I'm not coming back. We struggled with that the first week of Youth Opportunity Camp. We got through that. The next camp descended. And again, we're talking about 150 to 200 kids each week. The next camp came. We got started pretty well. And one day in the middle of the second week, I'm in the camp office and the camp director, Dave King, is talking to the program director and some other leaders. And he's talking to them about, you know, you guys are still doing stuff you did with a high school camp. And we had figured that out. We said, why don't you try something different in the evenings at the campfires? And then he said, why don't you try a magic campfire? Does anybody know what that is? He says, why don't you try a magic campfire? And that got my attention. And I thought, magic campfire? And he said, go see Walt. Walt was our maintenance man. Walt ran the camp. Walt's shed was in the middle of the camp. And so he said, go see Walt, because Walt can show you how to do a magic campfire. So Walt was at his shed, and we walked in, and Walt, you know, Dave said, we need to do a magic campfire. Can you show us how to do that? And he said, come into my office. Actually, come into my shed. And he got the formula for the magic campfire. Now, for those of you who are interested in magic, this formula is not found in any wizard's book, but it is found on a periodic table, if you know what I'm talking about. It's more chemical than it is wizardry, so just so you know. But Walt got the magic formula. He came out, and we had no idea what he was doing. He came out with this box of powder and this jug of liquid, you know, an old glass jar. He put the magic powder on the ground. He poured the magic liquid on it, and suddenly, was fire. And we saw the potential. And so he showed us, he demonstrated, how do you do this magic? And we thought, if we can get this set up for the last night for our kids, it would be great. So in the middle of the second week, I took time away from everybody. I went into the woods. I set up this thing because we wanted to make sure it worked. We made sure it didn't explode. You know, we wanted to be safe, right? So I got it all set up all by myself, and I pulled the magic strings, and we did the magic incantation, and we got the magic powder stuff, and a fire took off by itself. And I'm thinking, that's awesome. The next week, new counselors come in, or the new campers come in. And we're trying to decide, how do we do this thing that we call a magic campfire? And another counselor says, why don't we tell them a story, a chapter a night? I mean, you know, it's a good thing. And this, I didn't say this, but the other counselor said, why don't we tell them The Hobbit? Do you know the story? One of my favorites. And I've done a whole series on that. I didn't say that. She did. And so we told him the story of The Hobbit from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we made stuff up. We weren't really, you know, for the kids. And they were attentive, and it went pretty well. And Friday night came. I took the afternoon off. I went to the huge campfire circle right in the middle of the valley, right next to the woods, where you could see God's creation. It was an amazing setup. And I built this big box fire. And I put the magical formula inside and everything that you needed to do. And I put a little paper around it to make sure. And we really wanted it to work, so we used another magic liquid called kerosene, if you're familiar with that one. So we had some kerosene there, even paper soaked in kerosene, and logs soaked in kerosene. We wanted this baby to work. And so we get there, and we bring the kids in, and there's no fire. It's all dark. And you can hear they're kind of... there's supposed to be a fire. We get them to sit down. We tell part of the story. And I had a big staff, and it was awesome, man. I had a big staff, and I raised it like Gandalf, for those of you who know the story. Like the wizard, I raised it, and Gandalf took from the stars, and I touched the fireplace, and I'm praying, please start, please start, please start, you know. And suddenly inside you hear this chick-chick-chick-chick as the magic formula works. And then you see it catch paper. And then I saw it catch more paper. And then I stepped back. You know, you should use probably less than 60 gallons of kerosene for those kind of things. I really wanted it to work. And I bet that baby shot 10, 12 feet in the air. And I went from praying, please start, please start, please start, to please don't burn down the forest, please don't burn down the forest. But it was amazing. And the kids were astounded. The counselors knew how to do it. I was astounded, and I had set it up. And we finished the story, and we sang some songs. I played my guitar, and it was a wonderful end of the week. And I'm thinking, this is a great way for me to end my counseling days. You know? We've went out on a high note, and I can go paint and make some money when I get home. And then, God started to mess with me. I went back to the back in the dark, behind the sitting logs were at, and put my guitar away, and a little boy came up to me. And he just stood and looked at me. And he said, Bill? I said, yeah. Was that really magic? What do you say? Yeah, it was magic, and if you ever need a wizard, give me a call, right? Confused. Or say, no, if you get these chemicals, this is how we did it. Did you say that? No, man, that's kind of like you just trashed the whole thing. And some of you have heard me tell this story before, and I'm convinced God gave me these words. I said, well, you know, this is what I think. I said, you know, I think it was magic. But let me tell you what magic is. Magic is knowing more than others. Magic is working hard to do something, to get something done, and magic is caring enough to do it. It's knowing, it's doing, and it's caring. And I was really afraid he was going to ask me, now, Bill, please tell me, come on, what really is it? But he looked at me, and he smiled, and he walked away. Now, I pray he's someday going to be a Supreme Court justice, you know what I mean? You know, the wisdom I gave him, you know, he may have turned out to be a mass murderer, I don't know. But I'm convinced I had a Jesus moment right there. Even though we weren't talking faith, we weren't talking religion, most of that dialogue wasn't there. I am convinced Jesus sent that little boy to me to say, you have frustration here. You're cynical about what's going on. You know, this is hard with what you're doing. But let me tell you, you're doing something great by helping these kids. I'm convinced God sent that little boy to me. And how I wanted to be captive to my own frustration. How I was trying to give over and be captive to my own cynicism. To be captive to others who were giving me trouble in that camp. To be captive to the difficulty of working with children. I didn't want any part of that. I wanted to go home and do my own stuff, paint the houses, and make a lot of money. I was bound. I was in bondage to that idea. I don't want frustration in my life. And God said, frustration's the way it works. And so a couple days later, everybody's gone except the staff. We're mopping, we're sweeping, we're getting the dishes done, we're putting up things on the cabins to make sure they're okay for the winter. And God's honest truth, I'm at the campfire where we did the campfire, and the director comes to me. Dave King comes to me and says, Bill, can you sit down for a moment? Let's talk. And we talked about how the summer went. And he said, I could see you've been really frustrated. It's been a hard summer for you. But I just want to know, would you like to come back next summer? And I said, and I couldn't believe it, I'd love to. What an idiot. What an idiot. The next summer I met my wife. The next summer, I learned how to tell stories a little better. And I still tell a story every now and then. The next summer, I learned more how to work with staff, even in difficult situations. The next summer, I developed a heart for children that I really hadn't had before, especially those who couldn't afford to come to camp. And how they would break my heart. But how it was awesome to give them one evening, or one kickball game, or one song, or one hike in the woods that they couldn't have had before. You know, God bless me. But I had to deal with the frustration that I was going to bind myself with. The cynicism I had put in my own heart because I thought it was going to be easy. The freedom was going to be easy. Freedom to love was an easy thing. It is not. It is a hard thing. But it is worth it. It's worth it. We live in a free country. But let me ask you, are you frustrated by the leadership in our nation? Are there parts of your heart or parts of your soul in which you've developed a little cynical attitude about, you know, it really didn't make a difference if I do anything or not? Because you know how they are. And we get cynical and we get frustrated. And what do we say? It's not worth it. I'm going home to paint houses because I can make a lot more money. And life's easier and I can watch ball games. And we bind ourselves in slavery just like the Pharisees bound themselves. You can't do it that way. When our nation and our world and our God ask us to love fully and even risk ourselves. One of the things we did not read in the book of Exodus is when the people in Israel were freed, they went into the desert and they weren't slaves to the Egyptians anymore. And one of the first things they go into the desert, and when you go in the desert, it gets hard. And when it got hard, what did they do? Scripture says they murmured against Moses and against God. They complained. They got frustrated because freedom is hard. They got frustrated because they didn't know how to deal with their freedom. And are you like them? We're about to receive a wonderful gift. A loaf of bread and a cup. And the guy who gave us that gift, the guy who came to this earth to give us that gift, had so many frustrations, his disciples wouldn't listen to him. They argued with each other. He couldn't get the pastors and the leaders of his day to listen to them. He saw all kinds of chaos around him. And when they finally got a hold of him, they were going to torture and kill him. You think he wasn't frustrated? And yet, he said, I'm going to walk through it. And look at what we have. We have a gift, and we have a teaching, and we have a spirit of grace that touches all of our hearts, that redeems us and makes us whole. But you got to sign on. You got to put that which binds you aside and say, I'm going to love. And I'm going to do what God asks me to do. And I'm not going to be intimidated by the frustration even in my own heart. So let me ask you, what frustrates you? And what's been gnawing you to say, you know, I don't think I want to be of service or love or help because it's not going to be worth it. It's too painful. Give that to God today and see what God gives you in this simple loaf and this cup and that you might grow in the ways of grace. Let's bow for prayer. Most loving God, we thank you for the many gifts you give us. Especially this weekend, we thank you for freedom. We thank you for the freedom that's been given to us by our forefathers and foremothers. How they understood that we ought to be able to decide things for ourselves. We thank you for those, both in our government and in our church and in the world, who have transmitted that freedom to us and taught us that we are free to live as responsible, loving disciples of yours. Now touch each of our hearts this day. And whatever cynicism or frustration or difficulty we have, help us look past that and say, I know, Lord, that is. But I want to make a strike for you. I want to love as you have asked me to love. And then you can use it the way you want to use it. I don't have to control it. So loving God, open our hearts and minds as we receive this gift of bread and wine. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.